I'm Elder Stephen Snow, and you're listening to Gospel Tangents.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In 2013, the Church published a series of essays called the Gospel Topics Essays. That was shortly after Elder Stephen Snow was announced as the new Church historian in 2012. I asked Elder Snow what was his role in putting those essays together and getting them published online. So it's going to be a fascinating conversation, and I hope you check it out. Well, let's move on to the Gospel Topics essays. Can you talk about your role in getting those published?
Well, it was something that, as a member, when I was in the presidency of the 70, I was aware for many years that this was something that the brethren felt like needed to be done. And there had been some attempts in the past that had not worked out. They just hadn't worked. And a renewed emphasis began, had been building under Elder Marlon Jensen's tenure. And he really wanted to do this, to really get it. So under his leadership, and I was apprenticing still, there were 6 months when I got to work with Elder Jensen.
Oh, okay.
After I was first called. So I was called in January as church, or in December as church historian of 2011. And then finally took over officially August 1st of 2012. But during that 6 months I was with Marlon, we were stirring about that. And I think really under his leadership, it was presented to the Quorum of the Twelve and to the First Presidency. And 12 specific questions were identified. And in May of 2012, the councils, the leading quorums gave the approval to move ahead. And we had a committee of General Authority 70 and also scholars and historians from our department that reviewed all of the drafts that came in on all of these questions. We generally, the way it was done is we retained a outside historian to write the first draft, someone outside of church employment.
Now, why did you pick somebody outside church employment?
That's interesting. Well, we just felt it would, you know, you go to an expert, like Paul Reeve, for example, mm-hmm. for Race and the Priesthood. Mm-hmm. You can't find anyone better than Dr. Reeves to do. And so he was very helpful in getting us the first draft and the information we needed to go ahead. And that's just an example. But so that was the pattern for most of them. And then they were reviewed by our department, the historians and scholars, as well as the general authorities and the 70 on the committee. And then they were gone through many, many times, and then eventually were given to the 12 and First Presidency for approval. And I don't remember, I think it was 2013 when the first one came out, if I remember
and
right.
And was that the Race and Priesthood essay with Paul Reeve? I believe it was.
I think it was in 2013 when it came out, but I think there was another one or two that came out earlier.
Oh, okay.
But one was our Mormons Christians, for example.
Our Mormons Christians, yeah.
Yeah, and that was an early one. And we decided to put them in an existing database, which was the Gospel Topics. And really, there wasn't a lot of readership of them until Race and the Priesthood came out.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of people that say it seems like the church is kind of hiding these. They don't publicize them very well.
Well, that's very interesting. You know, the debate, just so I can give you a little context on mm-hmm. what was happening, was do you advertise and make a big deal about a website that you can go to learn all of these, you know, everything weird you wanted to know about the LDS Church, the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, you can go here. And so that was, or should we just kind of quietly release them? And the decision was made to kind of quietly put them out there so that they're accessible. And then at a later date, we could publicize them more if we wanted. As it turned out, that wasn't necessary. Once Race and the Priesthood and Nauvoo Polygamy came out, it wasn't mm-hmm. necessary to, publicize the Gospel Topics database. people began very quickly to learn about it.
Yes, yes. Well, and, you know, it does seem like, and I've heard anecdotally, and I don't know how big of a deal this is, but it seems like, kind of like what you said, do we tell all the weird things about the church, or do we just let people find them on their own? Have you heard that some people have lost testimonies? Or?
Well, that was the concern. We wanted to help a lot of people that were struggling on some of these questions. Mm-hmm. But you got to understand, a large majority, a large percentage of the church could care less. That really hasn't been anything they've worried about. And we have anecdotally understood that there have been a few that their world has been rocked by having learned in more detail some of these questions. Now, for the most part, I think they've been very, very positive. But we anticipated that there could be some concern early on by those who otherwise were settled in their faith and didn't really worry much about it. I was kind of interested by one person who said, well, you know, I can't accept the seer stone. That it was used in the translation, I'm leaving the church. And I'm thinking, well, how fundamentally sound in their faith would a person be? I mean, we have angels and gold plates and revelation and visions. Why would you worry about a seer stone? I mean, if we can today have a cell phone, and if man can do this, can't God make a few words appear on a rock? And I just didn't understand that thinking.
Or a burning bush or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. So, there was a concern initially that, our main concern was to address these issues and let people be able to understand them from a faith-based perspective. That we knew our members were finding a lot of sensationalized things online that were causing doubts and sowing seeds of doubt. And we felt that we owed members of the church a safe place to go to learn about these issues. Mm-hmm. We needed to be transparent. We needed to give full disclosure on these issues. But we needed to interpret them from a faith-based perspective. And it really hadn't been done. And even many of the leaders of the church were not comfortable with some of these issues.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there was some pushback on this, on these essays.
Well, I think they were interested in learning. I think they appreciated the effort that went into preparing the essays. And I think they were grateful to have a resource. Can imagine a seminary or institute teacher, how appreciative they'd be to have a resource that's been approved by the Quorum of the Twelve and the First Presidency on some of these difficult questions that they get all the time as they're teaching.
Well, and I know that there are some people that have said, well, these aren't signed. You know, we don't know that Paul Reeve, you know, helped participate in this, that the Quorum of 12 have approved it.
I use Paul just as an example, but I assure you, this wasn't a rogue effort by the church history department. Mm-hmm. Every single line was approved by the Quorum of the 12 and the First Presidency.
Okay. Well, and I know that there are some people that, especially let's talk about the polygamy essay a little bit. I think one of the biggest critiques that I hear out in Mormon history communities is the reference to that Joseph may have married some, I'm trying to remember the exact wording, some in their 15th year. And it's like, why don't they just say that she was 14?
Well, in hindsight, we very much wish we'd done just that.
Okay.
To say that she was 2 months shy of her 15th birthday, we should have just said she was 14. Mm-hmm. This is Fanny Alger.
Mm-hmm. It's Helen Mark Kimball, isn't it? I think Fanny was a little older, yeah.
Yeah, she, okay. You're right, I'm mistaken. But we should have just said that. It was, hindsight's 20/20. Mm-hmm. And I think being called out on that was entirely appropriate. We should have said she was 14.
Mm, okay. Well, interesting. So, I mean, I think polygamy, I know for myself, that was, as I read Rough Stone Rolling by Richard Bushman,
right,
that was the part of the book that I really personally struggled with a lot. And I think most members of the church, you know, they knew about Emma. Maybe a few of them knew about Fanny. But outside of that, most people didn't know.
No, and most people, you know, I think people understand kind of the Utah polygamy period. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, many of us descend from ancestors who practiced plural marriage in Utah or in the territory. But not many have understood the Nauvoo era and the fact that Joseph had multiple wives, some of whom were what we'd call spiritual wives or were sealed to him because they worried that their own husbands were not going to get them to the celestial kingdom. So there were those kind of sealings, but there were also sealings where he, treated them as a plural wife, and they were as husband and wife in consummated relationships. So although we don't know of any children or descendants of any of those plural marriages.
Brian's and Brent Ugo Perego have done some research trying to identify possible
he's
children.
Done quite a work, two-volume work, I think. Three-volume, yeah, you're right. So, I don't remember where we were, Rick.
Well, it's just that polygamy is really hard for people. And I think especially when we learn about Helen Mar Kimball being so young, I mean, that's where a lot of people, I think, struggle.
There's a lot of questions, too, about people have worried about what is it, will it be like in the next world, you know. And I just, at the time we were doing that particular essay, you know, I thought at the time, boy, it'd be nice to get a little more revelation on this. But, you know, we just tried to interpret what we have and put it out there. I think most historians who know the subject will, for the most part, appreciate the work that was done.
Yes.
It certainly was much more transparent than anything that's been done in the past. But, you know, a lot of it, we don't know the reasons entirely, but it is our history, and we need to deal with it as best we can. And the fact that so many families produce so many wonderful saints through the years, so many members of the church have descended, longtime families have descended through plural marriage. You know, I'm sure there was a purpose there for which we don't quite understand and may not understand until the next life, but I'm sure there was a reason. But I sure admire those people that practiced it. It must have been, from what I've read, it wasn't all roses. It must have been difficult at times.
I think it was very difficult.
Yeah.
Now, your last name is Snow, and Snow is a very important name in church history. Do you descend from any important Snows that we know?
Well, I'm always, probably the most oft-asked question in my 20 years as a 70, 18 as a general authority 70, is, do you descend from President Lorenzo Snow?
Mm-hmm.
And no, I descend from Erastus Snow.
Okay.
They both joined the church at roughly the same time, Lorenzo and Eliza in Ohio, and my ancestors in Vermont. And interestingly enough, they were called to the Quorum of the Twelve the same day.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And sat by one another for 39 years.
Wow.
But you have to go back seven generations to tie them together as Snows. Their common ancestors, Richard Snow from Massachusetts, and so I could claim Lorenzo as a relative, but it'd be a stretch.
Now, Snow College, who is that named after?
They approached San Pete Academy folks, approached President Lorenzo Snow about naming their academy after him.
Okay.
And he said, well, if you'll name it after myself and Erastus.
Oh, so it's a combo.
Yeah, then I think that'd be great.
Oh, wow.
But I think generally speaking, people look more to Lorenzo because he was the prophet at the time.
Famous Snow.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Elder Stephen Snow. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about journal writing. I was surprised about the policy that Elder Snow told us about general authorities and journals.
We try to encourage the brethren, the new brethren, to keep a record. Now, as a general authority, if your journal belongs to the church, so it's okay. You sign an agreement when you're called that's the case. All your personal papers.
Oh, really?
That relate to your time as a general authority are technically church property. That's a legal agreement that you sign.
Oh.
Now, if you're good enough to keep a journal and not make reference to any of your church service, you could do that, but that's pretty hard to do.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.